Blog Talk Radio.
We're a nation of haters under their control. Rise up everybody and burn down, burn down. The system fails, the exit pulls. Wake up the silence with the hands. I'm feeling the love in the topless club. I can feel the space between us. Little Capitan and the common man. I just know them all.
And this is Steven, and this is tonight, of course, is the Star Chamber episode 9. And it's good to be with you all tonight. And tonight, our hosts tonight are Michael West and S.H. Roddy. Susan Roddy is with us as well. So the trio of us will be guiding you over the course of tonight with two really, really awesome guests. And so, of course, I'm drinking a can of the green Monster Energy because our first guest has a little bit of an emerald theme. And we'll be getting to the wonderful Violet Patterson first. And she is an author with the great Paranormal box set that's coming out just shortly, and just came out, as a matter of fact, just yesterday. And let me get that correct. And then we will be joined by Rachel Smith, founder of Bitten by Books, one of the best paranormal book sites on the internet. And she'll be joining us second in our queue tonight. So it's going to be a fun night, and looking forward to all kinds of discussions. So, but first, I just want to give you a little bit of news from the home front, both the Imaginarium and Seventh Star press-wise, but we do have one bit of good news, and that's tomorrow. And that's Thursday, of course. Well, we call it Thursday, I guess, more commonly. But Stephen Shrewsbury, who truly captures the Robert E. Howard vibe of sword and sorcery. Anybody that's read his Garias novels like Overkill and Thrall can testify to that. Just larger than life, iconic, heroic type sword and sorcery. And tomorrow, his book, Philistine, is coming out, and this is tale of Goliath. And yes, we are talking about the Goliath you heard about as far as David and Goliath in Sunday school, but this is very, very different. This is the Stephen Shrewsbury version of the tale, but talks about, and I tell you, it's nothing like you ever heard in Sunday school, I promise. a little more about along the Goliath kind of flavor, but it's a epic scale sword and sorcery novel, so it's kind of different because it's truly epic scale, but it definitely at its heart is sword and sorcery. And so that we're really, really excited about this one coming out. New artwork from Matthew Perry is going to be unveiled tomorrow, both cover art and interiors, and the ebook will be available tomorrow, and with print coming out in about a week. So get ready for that. That's going to be a lot of fun. And then also Imaginarium, we're a little bit behind on opening up for our art show and our film festival submissions, but that is right imminent, and our film festival submission fee is only going to be $10, and we are going to have instructions for that coming up in the site in the next couple of days, and the art show instructions are going to be going up. The only thing with the art show is that if you're an artist, you do have to be there for set up or tear down, or have a representative there to set up and tear down your art in the art show. But the information and the cost, of course, we try to keep our costs as low as possible on that. So all that information is going to be going up on the site very shortly. So, but first of all, we do have some cool news. Susan has informed me tonight she's got some new news from her on the writing front, so she's going to talk a little bit about that. And so I'll just give it over to Michael and Susan for a second, and then we'll bring our first guest on.
Awesome. Well, thank you. As a matter of fact, yesterday I turned in final edits for a story that was actually kind of held up in a little bit of a nasty situation. I know a lot of people that know me know that I was one of several authors that was part of a fairly nasty breakup with a publisher early last year, and the story's kind of been on hold since, I guess, about April, so it is finally getting ready to see the light of day. Haunted, my very first story, it's a paranormal horror novella, is going to be published with Mocha Memoirs Press as of February 1st. So, like I said, it's been kind of a bumpy road. There's been a lot of back and forth and up and down, but we're finally back on track, and it's good to be there. So that's my news. Do you have anything, Michael?
Nothing pressing other than the fact that there are still a few copies of the hardcover special edition of The Wide Game still available. So if you haven't placed your order for that yet, I would go to the Seven Star Press website get yours ordered, because they are limited to only 75 and they're all signed and numbered. So you don't want to miss out, especially if you're a collector of the other Harmony series books. This is the this is technically the first book. It's the book that started it all, even though it's not originally with Seven Star Press. So it's good to have all the Harmony books together in one house.
You could say it's all in Harmony now. Okay,
yes.
Sorry.
Yes. Harmony has found Harmony.
Oh, wow. Well, guess what? We do have our first guest about to come on, and her name is Violet Patterson, and she is an author, and she's an author in the area of the paranormal and all kinds of cool stuff like Seers and Immortals and Seraphs, and like I said, she's got a brand-new box set she's going to be talking about. So without further ado, I would like to welcome Violet Patterson to the Star Chamber Show. Violet, you are on the show.
Hi, thanks for having me.
You are welcome. I can't vouch for what Susan might say tonight, because she's going on very little sleep due to her little one last night having a thing keeping her up last night. So Susan could be dangerous tonight, so just want to warn her.
I will try to behave, I promise. I just can't promise I'm going to make any sense.
Hey, there's nothing wrong with that. Ben, I've got the T-shirt and the snow globe.
Oh, then we're going to get along famously.
I'm just glad mine are past that point.
Oh, yeah. Mine's two, so she's right in the middle of it. So there's going to be a lot more of the silly, just where that came from.
Many adventures that will keep Susan up.
Occasionally my dog wakes me up in the middle of the night, but that's about it.
Just get through till they're five. Once they're five, it's all smooth sailing. Just get to five. Then it's good.
Cool.
Until they become teenagers.
Yeah, and then I was going to say, they become teenagers.
I'm
Michael's going through that right now.
Yeah, I've got one in high school and one in college, and they're going to drive me to an early grave. But.
Yeah, I don't want to think about that part yet. I'm just going to hold on to 7 and 8 and be happy with it.
Yeah,
very cool.
7 and 8, that's a good age. That's a good age.
And see,
you got some big news tonight, Violet.
I have a 2-year-old and an 18-year-old.
Oh,
very
wow.
Cool. Well, you have some very cool news, Violet, and we want to get to that right away. I mean, it's a brand new box set, which I think is insanely good value at 99 cents, I believe, and because I bought one. So, but tell us about your new box set, and it's got like 5 books in it, I believe.
Yes, it's the whole set. A lot of people have been asking me to put it all out as a set. So I did, and I thought, you know, as a promo, since it took me so long to format it all and put it all together, that I would run it for 99 cents for a little bit, and then I'm going to bump it back up to a reasonable price. But I felt bad, and it took me a long time, and I shouldn't have. But, you know, work in progress kind of overtook my life for a while, so I was late getting the box set out. But now it's out. It looks good. I'm happy with it. Hopefully it does well.
Now, the exact title of it is the Storm Sullivan Saga Emerald Seer Series box set. I just want to make sure I get the title of it right.
Yeah, that's a mouthful now that I think about it. But
Go ahead, sorry.
Oh, no, I just want to make sure that I kept the Emerald Seer Series because that's how the others are identified. And I just want to give it a little bit slightly different title. So Storm Sullivan is the main character, and she's the Emerald Seer. So I decided to name it after her. And the S's kind of roll off the tongue. I like that.
Well, see, that's why I'm drinking a green can of Monster tonight in honor of the Emerald Seer. So there you go.
Thank you.
But now you did kind of hint at this, and this is something that I know that Susan and Michael and I definitely wanted to kind of bring up with you, because you're one of our first self-published authors that we've had on the show. And we want to kind of get into a little bit about self-publishing and your experiences with it, pros and cons, if you wish to discuss, and just some of the things that you know you've discovered as a self-published author.
Oh, wow. A lot. I've learned a lot. My first book came out in November 11, 2011, and it was a steep learning curve, and I learned so much in that first year. But the biggest challenge I think I found over time is how much the industry changes. What worked very well for my first two releases didn't work as well by the time I got to my third and fourth because of the ebook world and how it just radically changes from one day to the next. I'm going to give a secret. I'm a control freak. So having the ability to control everything that goes on with my books is a pretty big bonus for being a self-published author. I didn't have that option with some of the small presses that I spoke with. And even one of the trad pubs that I spoke with, they just wanted to change too much of my story. And I kind of knew down the line that certain characters were going to be important, and I didn't want to get rid of them, and I didn't really want to change their names for reasons that come out later. And some people just don't want to work with that. So I talked to a few people, and they were like, well, what is it that you need anybody to do for you? And when I sat down and really looked at it, it was, at that time, not much. I did very well with my first two books, and I enjoyed it. I enjoyed having the freedom to do what I needed to do and not have deadlines and, you know, that weren't self-imposed. So, I mean, I've got a great community of writers who I talk to regularly. Some of my closest friends I've only met in person once or never at all, and it's because we talk about books all the time and help each other out, and it's awesome. It's a great, great, great community. I wouldn't trade it for anything.
Well, speaking of that, and this is something I know that, you know, Michael has witnessed in person, and I know Susan's got expertise in this area, but you put on a good show at conventions, speaking of the author community, and you are quite talented as a seamstress and maker of top hats, and I know Susan, you know, I know Susan knows all about this stuff. I'm a dunce when it comes to this, but Michael has seen you like this, of course, with that, you know, hashtagging brother of yours at Context. But let's talk about the dynamic, because I know Susan wants to get into maybe some marketing things as a self-published author, but this goes along with that as well. But your costuming and presentation that you do at shows, and how that kind of works into things with you having to kind of wear, no pun intended, so many hats as a self-published author.
It actually is just something I've always loved. I mean, I'm not kidding when I say that I may have made my siblings dress up in costumes when we were children to put on plays, and, you know, I may have been a little harsh with them if they were out of character, but, you know, they love me for it, and it's just kind of who I am. So I learned the basic sewing from my mom and my great-grandmother, and taught myself the rest. I wing it more often than not, but I just have a thing. I like elaborate costumes. I like to put on a show. I like to entertain. I mean, that's the whole point of life. Otherwise, it's not really worth it, is it? I mean, if you're not having fun, it's just not worth it. So if I can dress up as somebody else for a day and make people smile or, you know, get people excited, then I'm all for it.
If you can get Michael West to dress up with one of the top hats, that would be awesome.
Yeah, I would like challenge to see that one. Accepted.
Give a nice top hat with like a skull at the front and like covered in like that cobweb material kind of thing. That'd be cool.
Oh, I'm on it. I'm so on it. Just you wait. Next time I see you.
Well, I always tell my wife, I said, you know what? I said, I just feel truly alive at conventions. Of course, she says that's sad, but
I've witnessed that.
It's just like you go to a convention and it's just like, you know, I just feel like I'm in my element, you know, when I'm at among my people.
I absolutely agree with you 100%.
It does have a reunion kind of vibe. Oh, what was that, Susan?
I said there is absolutely nothing wrong with being a con geek. I think we all kind of are to some extent. It just goes with the territory.
Well, if it weren't for cons, I wouldn't have met all of you. You know, first
exactly.
Day, really.
This is true. This is true.
Go ahead.
I was just going to say, because you and I, the first time we met was when we were both on the same panel at In Conjunction.
Yes, absolutely was. And then I know, Susan and I encountered each other, I think, at the first time was at Con Carolinas, I believe. Am I correct on that?
It was Mysticon right before Con Carolinas.
Mysticon, that's right. That's right, right before Con Carolinas. And then I know I've seen Violet at both Context and Fandom Fest, where she was, of course, putting on quite an elegant show both times. So, you know. But
that's what
but that's fun. I mean, I think I like the reunion aspect of conventions. It's kind of cool. You just, you know, it's kind of like everybody's regrouping and, you know, getting back together. It's always a good vibe to have.
Well, it's funny because I've got some friends who live here in town, and the only time we really see each other is at the conventions. I'm like, you know, we live just a few miles away from each other. Why don't we ever get together outside of conventions? But that's about the only time we see each other.
That's what I always say, Jason Sizemore, you know, of course, the legendary maverick behind Apex Publishing, but he and I both live in Lexington, but we never, ever see each other here, you know, unless we're at a book event. It's just absolutely insane, you know, and so I've joked with him about that quite a bit. But it is very true with that. But in addition to, like I said, as far as like the costuming and doing, you know, conventions and live events, what are some of the challenges you've seen, Violet, as far as being self-published? Admittedly, you know, there's literally millions of new titles going up per year. So there's this ocean of content. What kind of things do you do to, I guess, kind of get yourself seen and heard, even beyond conventions?
I do a lot of, not so much lately because it's really cold outside, but I do a lot of local events. I have been to a few of the local bookstores. I have a signing that I need to schedule with one in the town where I work, but I do a lot of events during the summer just around town and getting out there and meeting people. I've been to the library. I have spoken to my kids' classes. I also have a young adult series out, so, just one. It's not done yet. Do promote that way. I just kind of talk to people wherever I go with my job, and I put out the word as much as I can. I mean, whenever I talk to people, I mean, just that's all I will do with my life. But, you know, I tell them I write, and a lot of people are interested in that. I mean, they think it's kind of a novelty more than anything else. Of course, everybody wants to that doesn't always go over well either. I don't know.
Well, Susan, you have a little bit of experience with the self-publishing world, but yeah, I guess maybe you could kind of jump in here on some of the challenges that, you know, maybe that you and Violet have had to deal with too.
Yeah, the biggest problem we've discovered, the one self-published thing that we have out right now, it's actually one of our co-hosts not here. Selah, Janelle, and I, we kind of put this thing together between the two of us. It was one of those weird last-minute experiments. I told you I can't talk. I'm tired. Please forgive me. but one of the things we've seen that's been pretty much the biggest problem is the market itself. And I know it constantly stays flooded, like Stephen was saying, with new titles, and a lot of it is things that are just kind of hastily written and put up there. So I guess my question would be, how do you work to combat the market itself and still somehow manage to come out on top?
Therein lies the biggest challenge. I mean, I think that I know a very few authors who are self-published who have seen amazing success. And, I mean, one that I'm thinking of in particular does not have to work at a day job anymore. She supports herself solely on her writing. And she had a large following before she published because of other things that she's done in her life. And, you know, I think all of those people bought her books and supported her, and then she had new groups that she forged, and everybody's kind of bonded together because she's a people person. I mean, she's very good at making friends, most of them via Twitter and Instagram and, you know, Facebook, I guess, you know, Amazon forums before they became overrun by trolls. You know, it's just really meeting as many people and getting the word out there to as many people as possible, and then standing by your work, continuing to deliver a good product. I mean, I see a lot of for lack of another word, crap. I mean, there are books that I've read. I've read a lot of self-pub books because I'm curious. I want to see what else is out there, and you need to know your competition. And when I'm seeing a lot of books that have 50, 60, 100 reviews, and they're almost all 5-star reviews, I get really frustrated because I read them and there are literally things missing. I mean, where there is no possible way that somebody could have given this book a 5-star review. And I know that these are paid reviews and these are people who had their families review and so on and so forth. And it gets me down. I mean, I'm not going to lie. I think most of the people I talk to who are in the same boat say the same thing. But I think that those people aren't going to stay around either. They're going to be a one-and-done deal. They made their money and they had their moment of fame and then they're out. And they're not going to stick with it. It's just about sticking with it.
Yeah, and you're building a nice franchise, too.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just, it's like I was saying, it tends to be very hard to get noticed among the piles of, like you said, it really is just piles of crap. I mean, things are hastily written. They're not edited right. It's not done the way it should be. And, you know, and I guess along those same lines, you hear a lot of people talking about how literature is a dying art. Do you think all of this, the advent of self-publishing, has anything to do with that thought?
I don't agree with that thought, to be honest. I think more people are reading now than I have ever known before in my adult life. I mean, I'm talking out of college, no longer needing to read textbooks for your next class. More of my friends have started reading over the last couple of years for pleasure than have read my entire life. I have had a lot of interest, not even necessarily in my books, but in books of friends. And then I'll have people who I swear I didn't think they read anything other than ESPN you know, texting me or calling me and saying, hey, thanks for that suggestion. I really, really dug that book. Are there any other ones? And I think that's where things are turning, and we're starting to see people reading on their commutes. And the more that there's public transit, which, you know, I no longer have access to, but I did when I lived in Seattle, everybody on the bus had a paperback book, a hardcover book, or some type of electronic device. I mean, you have a full bus full where people are just reading the entire commute. And it was not unusual for people to put down a dozen books in a month. And I'd never heard of people reading like that other than me. You know, I read like that as a kid all the time. But I think it's changing, and there are so many books out there, so there is so much more opportunity. But people are not going to put up with the crap anymore. I think that's been a big change. I mean, I've had people say, I couldn't even finish such and such a book. Don't read this one. I couldn't even finish it. And I think people are starting to be a little bit more judicious about how or about what books they choose to read. I still think that the way to go is a grassroots campaign, and that's what I've been working on. And I think that's the best way to have success, is to build your own crowd and have it fan out and fan out and fan out. I mean, conventions are a good way to do it, but just talking to people. And if they like you and they like what they have to say or what you have to say to them, then there's a good shot that they're going to buy your book, at least your first one. And then from there, it's up to you to be a good enough storyteller to keep them captivated and wanting more. I don't know. I don't know what else to say other than that. You know, like, it's parents
but, hey,
for the kids.
That sounds like great advice, though. It's like we talk about all the time. You know, everybody has to start somewhere. And, you know, to hear somebody who's actually been there and done it and done it well say that, I think that helps a lot.
Thank you. I work on it. It's hard. It's hard work.
Yes, yes. See, that's the thing. That's one of those things that it really drives me crazy when you have anybody sits down and says, oh, I can write a book. Writing a book is not as easy as people think. And, you know,
no.
The aftermath, the editing and the marketing, that's even harder.
Correct. It is a challenge to explain it to people all the time.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, right. No. If anyone who thinks that writing a book is easy has just never done it.
no you know, kidding. I mean, if you put it in perspective, I guess reading a book is kind of the easy part. But it's, you know, everything that comes after it seems to get more and more and more complicated even as time goes on, especially with, like you were talking about, the constantly changing market.
Well, see, now I'm actually the opposite. I think that the hardest part of writing it is just getting it written and getting it out there. I love the everything that comes after. I love the editing process and the marketing process and all of that, because once it's, you know, to me it's like, you know, you give birth and you give birth to this amalgamous thing, this huge thing, and then through the editing process and everything that comes after, you kind of chip away at the marble and make it something beautiful and something that will, you know, is fit for people to see, kind of a thing. And I just really get into the you know, making it better once it's done. I mean, to me, when I sit down in front of a blank screen on my laptop and just have to fill it full of words, that to me is the most, you know, painful or nerve wracking thing about the whole process.
But then you get to a point like Violet where you have like five books in this cool box set with the Storm Sullivan Saga, the Emerald Seer series for 99 cents now. So, yeah, I had to do that plug. I'm sorry.
I appreciate that plug.
No, it's just so cool, though. I mean, just, yeah, I still can't get over the, you know, what a deal that is. But yeah, that's part of what you got to do, though, too, like in the marketing, like the marketing phase and all is do. Yeah, that's the way the market is now, is do a lot of pricing type of approaches, free days, 99-cent deals, you know, all the different promotions that you can do with that. And that yeah, it's just crazy because it just seems to change every few months or whatever.
Every few months, but, like every few weeks.
every 2 weeks, yeah.
Must be Tuesday.
Well, we are going to be joined by our second guest of the night, and this is very personally, I'm just stoked about this. And, yeah, I just found out today, actually, Violet's going to be on her site later in April, as a matter of fact, so there's a nice little segue there. But Rachel Smith of Bitten by Books is going to be joining us here in a second, and she has got just an amazing site that she founded, which you know, just all the tons of fans of the paranormal, paranormal types of literature, and all just love this site. I know Michael and I have both done events at Bitten by Books, and they are both just fantastic experiences. And so, you know, we are very familiar with her site, love it, and it's just a very, very hugely popular site. And so, we're really honored to have Rachel join us tonight. She's going to be a guest at Imaginarium along with Violet coming up next September. And so without further ado, welcome, Rachel, to the Star Chamber Show. You are live on the air now.
Hey, everybody. Thank you so much for having me.
You're welcome. Good to hear from you. And you've been a very busy bee lately with all kinds of stuff, I hear.
Oh, my gosh, yes, it's been absolutely insane, a good kind of insanity, but, yeah, things are rocking and rolling over on Bitten by Books, and we're just excited for 2014 and tons of really fun changes coming up.
Well, you want to tackle maybe, let's see, first, I guess one thing that's cool is that you've been very excited about is the site redesign, and, of course, with a big site and popular site. Tell us a little bit about what goes into, you know, that and doing a redesign of an established site like yours.
Well, a lot of pain, apparently. It's huge because the site has been in existence since May of 2008. So we have about 7,000 posts to try and reroute and re-guide into a new template, a new format, as well as adding some new genres and some other things going on. So there's a massive, massive amount of data and work that has to go into doing that. So it's exciting, it's terrifying, and, you know, I just hope that my tech guy, who I love dearly, will be able to meet the challenge. So, yeah, it's pretty exciting. We're finding, you know, there's some new limitations. There's lots of awesome new technology and stuff to make blogs more interactive and more like social networks, which is kind of what we're going for. And, you know, just getting all that info ported over is like a huge, huge piece of it. So, yeah.
Oh, that's a massive project, and I don't envy you on that for sure. Because you know, like as you're doing this redesign, of course, you have a huge number. I mean, traffic wise, I mean, you guys get quite a bit of traffic too, and that's got to be a tough thing to manage with tweaking new things out there.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of stuff in the middle of the night, and we're really digging into the meat of it this week. So. I don't know when it'll be quite finished, but our hope is to have everything up and running and smoothly at the beginning of March at the very latest. Like I said, that data transport is going to be the killer part. So.
Wow. Yeah. And you also mentioned in addition when we were talking that intrigued me a lot, and you were talking about an expansion of genres. So I'm just going to let you tell us about that aspect.
Well, Bitten by Books originally started out with my love and passion of paranormal and urban fantasy books, paranormal fiction, and it's kind of got to the point, you know, where, I mean, that so many people write in that genre. There's so many fabulous authors, there's so many new authors and established authors, but we know that there's a huge potential for crossover into other genres. You know, the romance genre is huge, you know, and steampunk is kind of fits in sometimes paranormal, but not always. You know, it's more of a sci-fi. You know, we've got the sci-fi, and then mysteries are another big genre for people who read in in the paranormal. So, I mean, really, the crossover potential is really quite great, and our reviewers have all been just really excited from what I can see so far to do some different kind of material, you know, to not be just pegged into one genre, but to be able to expand out into other things that they like. So that's really thrilling in and of itself to know that, you know, they're willing to, you know, take a hand in that. And I think that the readers, we've done some polling of the readers, and I've talked individually on one-on-one basis with several longtime readers of the site and authors, and everybody's really excited about it. So.
Well, I think it makes sense, and I know, you know, any of our other folks on the air here can jump in a little bit on this, but I think it's a very natural thing because I know with Susan and Michael and Violet and all, I mean, they bring lots of different elements, you know, that cross genres sometimes into their work. And so it's kind of a natural kind of segue because you do kind of see kind of like a little bit of a meshing going on between genres quite a bit nowadays.
Yeah. I agree. There's like mashups, you know, in between. You know, you've got vampires in space now, and I mean, it's no longer the Final Frontier. Vampires everywhere. I mean, so you get some really great mashups, and I think that's really exciting too. You know, I think the new site will be. It's kind of going to be like a portal where you go and you can pick whatever genre that you want to read about or see events about or whatever. So it's going to be really a pretty big deal. I mean, especially for us, it's really going to take it to a whole new level.
Did you see the Amish Vampires in Space book?
Did you bring that up?
No, I haven't. Is that really a book?
Somebody's got to email me
information on that. I mean, it's funny because, you know, you guys are talking about self-publishing. Like, I think that myself, and I know our reviewers, have read probably more self-pub books than anybody on the planet at this point. Now, I've got reviewers who have been with me since 2008, and we have read the gamut. I mean, you would not believe some of the just very creative type books that have come out, and, you know, not just self-pub, but, I mean, traditional pub as well, but there's a lot of very interesting material out, let's put it that way.
Okay, there's your Amish Vampires in Space. It is a real book.
Awesome.
I actually couldn't help it. I posted it to my wall one day, and it got quite a reaction on Facebook when I put that one up there because nobody, of course, would have thought it was real if I didn't post the Amazon link.
Jedediah, we're going to raise that Martian barn. Yeah.
But the cool thing is that when you read the reviews on it, it looks like the guy really I mean, it wasn't just a gimmick. I mean, he actually found a really good device to keep the Amish kind of culture and explain how they got into space, you know, into that kind of setting. So, he actually, you know, it's not a total gimmick, and he actually did a lot of research and really you know, kind of incorporated that into the book. So it actually has a kind of a serious undertone too, which makes it even better.
Stephen read the book. Just admit it, Stephen.
Yeah.
I
confess I did buy it.
I knew it. See, all that publicity was, you know, it was good publicity. At least he sold one copy of that book. So that's good.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. But, oh, man. But, yeah, I'm sure you see quite a bit, I mean, with reviewing especially, and it gets in a little bit of some of the stuff that Violet has to face as a self-published author, but you really do run the gamut because you have some people that really do it well and do it as well as any mm-hmm. publisher. You know, they're able to wear all those hats and produce a quality piece of work. But then on the other end of the spectrum, you have, as you say, that some very interesting releases. So,
right. I
don't know. Do you have any advice for authors for how to deal with that? You know, as far as like if they're one of the good ones, how do they? You know, what's your advice for them as far as like when approaching a site? You know, and you know, and we all know you're getting bombarded with review requests. What are some things that maybe some of the serious ones that really do have a good product? What what kind of words of wisdom can you pass along to them for approaching like a Bitten by Books or, you know, a site like yours?
Well, words of wisdom? Come on now, Stephen. You know, I think the most important thing, you know, and especially for anybody who's in this industry, whether, you know, you're on the review side of it or the ops side of it, is just a professional, being professional, professional email, you know, and being respectful of people's time, you know, both sides of it, you know. It's like, you know, and also I think the important thing to remember is to check sites and make sure that they have, like, and it's really long, and people really laugh at me, but we have a terms of review page, so I often refer people to that. And if they agree to the terms that we've set forth for our site as our standard, it's not an industry standard or anything like that, you know, if they agree to that and they still want to submit their book, then, you know, that's when the, you know, we start the relationship and start building a rapport, you know, around the reviews and stuff like that. So definitely check the site before that you're thinking about submitting to, before just blindly shooting off a PDF of your work, and check and see if they've got terms of review. If they do, great. If you still want to go forward after that, then just drop them a line. You know, I think a lot of people are thrilled to be able to review. Now, I know there's some sites out there who won't review self-published stuff, and to me, that just doesn't even make sense, because a lot of mid-list and even higher authors I've seen release their own self-pub stuff in the last 2 years. So to say you're not going to take, you know, self-pub work is, you know, kind of cutting your foot off to spite your leg, I guess. But, you know, that's another thing, too, is, you know, a lot of sites don't, so it's important to check there. Sometimes their terms of review is on their about page, you know. Sometimes they don't have it. Now, if they don't have anything like that, that, to me, is a red flag. You know, it's like, okay, if a review site, if you really want to take the time to invest to submit your work, you want to have a site that's well put together, you know, a review site that's well put together and that, you know, has their stuff in a row, I guess. I don't know if that makes sense or not, but, you know, so you want to kind of look at who you're submitting to and kind of, you know, maybe ask for recommendations from other author friends, see if they've worked with them before, you know. I mean, because you could spend an entire day or a week, you know, submitting PDFs and maybe not get any reviews at all, you know. So maximize your time, you know, take a little bit of extra time to kind of check it out. That's my best advice.
Yeah, I always thought it's best to, you know, get, you know, contact established before ever even sending, like, a book over, as far as a digital copy or anything like that. But, you know, because lots of them, you know, have such, you know, they're inundated with their review queues. And a site like yours, you know, has many reviewers, can handle, you know, a decent volume of books. But some of the sites run by a single operator, I mean, they're to-be-read piles are sky high, and sometimes you got to check to see where in the queue you might be, because that's one thing that authors, I think, make a big mistake on, is that when they do get a acceptance for a review, they suddenly start getting pushy with the reviewer about when the review is going to get posted and did you do it yet and all that kind of thing, and I think a lot of authors end up irritating book reviewers and bloggers because they don't have a lot of patience like once they do submit it. So, you know, that's, I'm sure that's something you've dealt with too, I'm sure, you know, some rather pushy authors. But,
no, never, you know, never, no pushy authors. I don't know, guys, but, you know, I mean, in the course of the time that I've been doing this, I've had really some great experiences, and I've dealt with a lot of really wonderful people, and there's less than five that I can think of that, you know, maybe there was some kind of a challenge. And I think that's pretty telling, you know. I think the authors seem like, for the most part, that we've worked with, at least in this genre, maybe it'll be different when we branch out, but have been really, really gracious, and they've been very kind, and it's been really great. So I've been really lucky in that respect.
Yeah, no, that's good. Yeah, because we had a guest. She was great. I mean, Cabin Goddess, Chris Morton, and of course she gave us some insights to some of the just absolutely insane stuff that she's had to deal with, you know, just some misbehaving authors and that kind of thing. So we do like to bring that topic up, just kind of encourage all the authors listening out there to be of the behaving variety, and as you say, the professional type. You know, because there's definitely some crazy stuff that happens over Goodreads and all kinds of places with authors. authors. And then too, I think it also a lot of unethical stuff that Violet was kind of getting at. You know, when you look at a book on Amazon and it's by a self-pubbed author, and I've even seen this with like a first release where the first week it's up, all of a sudden it magically has like 70 reviews. And I literally saw this once. Every single review was 5-star. And I went through them, and you could tell that they were not real. I mean, they definitely weren't like real, you know, reviews. Or, you know, they were definitely, you know, there's something funny about them. So, I mean, some weird stuff does happen there in terms of ethics and all, as far as in the book world these days.
Yeah, it gets pretty competitive out there from, you know, what I can see, you know, so I can see stuff like that happening for sure. I tend not to read other people's reviews. I'm not bad, but I really don't read the reviews on Goodreads or Amazon, and I, you know, definitely take recommendations from our reviewers, and, you know, I definitely have authors that I follow, and
yeah.
You know, I'm not sure, I guess from a business standpoint, I'm really not sure how much people really read reviews. Now, if something gets bad reviews, I'm more apt to take a look at it, especially if it's just gruelingly horrible, you know, like, but, I mean, I don't know, what do you guys think? Do you think that people are really paying attention to the Amazon reviews and the Goodreads reviews, or do you think people are going to make up their own minds and, you know, pick books that seem like, you know, from the synopsis to the back of the book, you know?
I think it's a little bit of both. I mean, I've seen or had people email me that, you know, got, you know, picked up the book because of, you know, some reviews that, you know, actually, you know, that have appeared on your site or Kevin Goddess's site or whatnot that, you know, are there on Goodreads and they're like, oh, you know, I wouldn't have picked this up, but I saw this. And so I gave it a shot and I really enjoyed it. And then there are others where, you know, it's, you know, I wouldn't have picked this book up in a million years, but a friend recommended it to me. So, you know, it just depends. And then there are some people that just say, you know, I saw the cover and I, you know, thought I'd give it a shot. So I tend to not read reviews of certain genres just because it's so subjective. Because what I like in a fantasy, other people might not like in a fantasy, and vice versa. So I tend to go with more, you know, either friend recommendations or just something that strikes a chord with me when I look at it. Which is, you know, I still love going to, you know, Barnes & Noble and different, you know, half-price books and different actual bookstores and, you know, going through the shelves and picking up the actual books and browsing them and whatnot as opposed to just, you know, going to Amazon and reading the snippet.
Right.
But it does affect how some of the promo companies work with you, like the BookBubs and things like that. I mean, they actually do look at, you know, your review average rating and number of reviews when they actually decide whether or not they'll take your money to promote you. And so as far as like some of the promotional services that are out there and, some of the places, you know, like, of course, you know, we all heard about Pixel of Ink and sites like that. I mean, they do look at the aggregate as far as, like, Amazon reviews. You know, if you've got, you know, 50 reviews and they average 4.2, you know, that makes a difference. And so yeah, it does play a role. And but with me, I mean, it raises a red flag if I look at any book and see nothing but 5-star reviews because it's not natural. Because, I mean, yeah, I can pick out any Neil Gaiman book. I can pick out any George R. R. Martin book. Guarantee you, you're going to find a 1-star review where somebody says, this is the worst book I've ever read about, you know, those guys. And so, I mean, you know, so as far as, you know, reviews go, a natural stratification should show up if it's a real, you know, stratification of reviews. I mean, it shouldn't be all like all 5-star reviews. There's nobody that would achieve that naturally, I think. You know, I mean, I think it, you know, you're definitely going to get a mix of different levels. So it actually raises a red flag with me when I see something like that.
Mm-hmm. What I love is reading the, I've read, if you ever want to cry, go and read the reviews on Goodreads for Bram Stoker's Dracula.
Oh, my God. That's depressing.
I read Twilight, and I thought I should read the original, and it was like nothing like Twilight.
Oh, God.
You had to go there.
It's
horrible.
I literally wanted to weep when I was done reading about a handful of them.
Well, you guys,
it's edifying and depressing.
I've held fast, and I have never read the Twilight Saga. I know that sounds crazy for someone who runs a paranormal fiction review site, but it's true. Now, I think we saw one of the movies, maybe. Yeah, I'm getting the affirmative. We saw one movie, but I've never read books because that's been, and this is one of the reasons why I don't read reviews, is because I don't want to be disappointed. I've read so many disappointing, I read so many fabulous reviews. I've read the whole gamut. I know you guys have all probably seen them, and all kinds of articles, and I'm just not ready. Maybe if I retire someday, that'll be my first on my to-do list.
Don't read
it.
It's
ahead.
Not worth it. It's horrible. Twilight's horrible. Don't do it.
I actually got 80 pages into the first book, and then I'm like, we're going to be stuck in this character's head the whole no.
See, after about 400 pages, you become a little bit desensitized to the ridiculousness, and then it's just a train wreck, and you have to know how bad it's going to get. At least that's how it was.
Well,
because, yeah, I did sit and read all four of them, but there's almost a drinking game in it.
Yeah.
That's how I read it. Was with a drinking game.
And
every time Bella did something stupid, I took a shot. It was great. I was really drunk.
That's awesome.
And then you ended up in an alcohol-induced coma. And
yeah, she was
by
the
time,
all these years later.
Series.
Yeah, it was not good. It's not good.
Well, my
and
my,
I don't want any
is,
girls looking up to that character at all. She's not a heroine.
Well,
she's
Exactly. That was my whole point. It's like, you know, I like strong female characters, and I like women who can kick butt, you know, and someone who is willing to, you know, almost commit suicide just so their boyfriend will love them again is no.
Well, see, my problem with the series is that the entire series is based on just a ridiculous non-issue. It just the whole basis of the meat of the series is just a ridiculous problem that could easily be solved if the characters had personality and this girl had some common sense.
Something that we all had at that age, right? Remember, the frontal lobe is not fully formulated until you're 23. Impulse control is not so good. No, I totally get where you guys are coming from.
Oh, dear.
Can we have a moment of silence?
Yeah. No, how do you top that? But I do, before we run out of time, though, one thing I do want to make sure we cover is that you all, Bitten by Books, you know, you have, of course, author events, and, you know, Michael and I have both been on author events with you before, Rachel, and they are just amazingly fun and incredibly interactive. And I know Violet's got one coming up with you in April. And but as far as that goes, although, you've got a lot of stuff going on that authors can take advantage of as far as you know, with your heavy traffic, as far as your ads and stuff like that. Do you want to, you know, give a quick little talk about some of that stuff?
Yeah, the one thing is, Bitten by Books is all volunteer run, so all of our reviewers are volunteers, and our editors and our review manager and everybody volunteers their time to bring all the reviews and the events. I do all the event coordination and the advertising. you know, we offer a bunch of free options to promote authors, and that's what we've done that since the very, very beginning, and I think that's really important. We try and, you know, support authors as much as possible, you know, and publishing companies, like, I don't want to say they're second, but they, you know, they come, we put the authors, we try and put the authors first.
Oh, sure.
You know, because, because, you know, we understand, you know, it's a lot of work, you know, it's a lot of work writing a book, it's a lot of work going through the marketing of it and the promotion of it, and if you've got something great and noteworthy, we want to be there and support you, no matter what your genre is, no matter what your book is, no matter what. And so that's really, if you go to the Bitten by Books, it's bittenbybooks.com website, and there's a tab called Author Services, which is, you know, it's worth to read all the way through. I know it's really long. I'm going to work on trying to shorten that up. But read through and see some of the things that we offer. Now, we do book up 2 or 3, 4 or 5 months in advance sometimes. We offer events on the prime days of the week where we get the most traffic. A lot of people are like, oh, I want to do it on the weekend. Well, it's like, sorry, nobody's home on the weekend. I mean, they are, and people are more mobile than they used to be, but the prime traffic days are Tuesday, Wednesdays, and Thursday for blog traffic. So that's why we have our events in the middle of the week. You know, we really have found that there's been some really good success when authors come and they interact. You know, I try to avoid having events where there's no author there because people really come to our site and they come to meet authors. It's a perfect time to meet your fans in a relaxed setting where you can get, you know, you the author can be in your pajamas and drink a Budweiser or whatever you want to do while you're having your event, you know, and be able to answer questions, and also the readers will be able to ask you questions that maybe they might not get answered if you're having it in a public forum. You know, when you're doing it at a bookstore, which is great, I think it's awesome to support indie bookstores and bookstores in general, but when you're doing an online event, you have more time to formulate your answers, you know, and really build that rapport with readers. And, you know, you'll find that the more you talk to them, the more they open up and the more questions they ask. And there's been some amazing dialogue that's taken place on Bitten by Books over the last 5.5 years. I mean, just amazing between authors and readers. I mean, they're pretty savvy, you know. And I think that's one of the key things about selling your books is having events on sites, not just ours, but other sites that have that interaction. Because, you know, you can spend a month writing up posts, guest posts, and plaster them all over the internet, but if nobody reads them, what's the point? So, you know, that's just kind of where we come from as far as promotion and stuff like that. And we found that combining your event with an ad, it's like you've had your event, you've interacted with our readers, more than likely, if they love you, they're going to buy your book, which is awesome. I can't guarantee you that, but more than likely they will. But if you have an ad on the site, that just prolongs that. You know, they say, oh, hey, I know that author. They're more apt to click through and pick up your titles or follow you or subscribe to your Amazon newsletter if you've got one of those set up. I mean, it's really really pretty powerful. And we've got some really long-time advertisers on the site, not just independent authors, but all of the large publishing companies take out ads with us as well. So that's a pretty awesome thing too. So
exactly. Giant publishing companies like Seven Star Press, I know, have advertised with you.
Yeah, they're awesome. Seven Star Press is amazing. If you haven't every single book that they produce, you need to do that right now. Don't hold back.
I know, Mike. Oh, sorry. We're coming right to the end of the wire here, and I know I will say Michael and I can both vouch for how cool those events are at Bitten by Books. We both loved our time there, and they were very interactive and very cool. But we are at the end of the line here, and so we wanted to give both you, Rachel, and then Violet real quickly, just tell our audience where they can find you. And then next week we have JL Mulvihill coming on with Andy Hott for an encore to talk about books, Zero King Frontman. But go ahead and give your links out real quick.
Go ahead, Violet. Oh. Oh, okay. You can follow me on Twitter at Books by Violet. Pretty much if you type in Books by Violet, you can find me everywhere. And my blog is emeraldseer.blogspot.com.
And awesome. Buy the new box set, everybody.
Yes, buy the box set. It looks amazing. I can't wait to get my set. I'm at bittenbybooks.com. You can follow me on Twitter at bittenbybooks. On Facebook, just search for our fan page, which is Bitten by Books, and look for the red logo with the vampire lady on it, and that's us.
Love
Wonderful.
That logo.
Well, we've made it. We made it. just got those links in time. So thank you so much, Violet and Rachel, for joining us. I think it's been a great show. The time flew because we're right on the cusp here. But appreciate you guys coming aboard, and have a great night.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Good night, everybody.
Good night.